Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Well, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly vigorous, relentless, and sometimes ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the extraordinarily well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. It's my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio, just a free man trying to stay afloat in the sea of communism here. And encourage you to be part of the show with your comments on the chat, Blog Talk Radio chat, or your calls. Phone number is 563-999-3787, 563-999-3787. Got Lon in the chat tonight already. Lon, great to have you with. Lon from central Wisconsin, from the Wausau area. And if you're listening to the show, you can also, which I believe the, the chat function doesn't work on most phones. I think that's a flash-based function. You're welcome to interact with the show on the MeWe platform, MeWe.com/P/WellArmedRadio. Take you to the WellArmed Radio page. I shared the link to tonight's show just because I have some gun-related stuff going on. I don't usually do that to the Wisconsin Carry group in MeWe, but I did it tonight because we've got some gun-related, self-defense-related stuff going on with the Kyle Rittenhouse hearing, and I thought people might want to hear the commentary on that, my thoughts on that, as I watched the evidentiary hearing that took place. I think it was Friday that hearing was played. Maybe it was Thursday. They start to push together, blend together for me sometimes, but it was either Thursday or Friday that that took place. But so you can also comment in the show link on blog, the show link on MeWe, and I'll try to see it there. Or you can call 563-999-3787. Haven't had a call in a while, but that's okay. I get a couple emails a week from people who listen to the show and catch the show. My friend Tom in Madison, who's great to it's just a good reminder of who I'm talking to out there, so I can just be and it's just nice to know. Sometimes I see the show numbers and I just think, maybe people stopped in and watched a listen, people browsing through Blog Talk clicked on it, listened for 2 seconds. They don't really, maybe there's metrics. I haven't seen them, but where Blog Talk doesn't tell you how long people listened, how much they caught, just that, just the number of listens are available to see through Blog Talk. So, which of course during the summer, the numbers get really low. I mean, we're down, we're below 100, for a weekly show. Most of those are with a podcast. A good show used to be like 2,500, 3,000 listens total. And I don't remember, that was because we've been doing the show since 2013. I don't remember if that was, I think at that time they did break down live versus podcast. I want to say 400 live was pretty typical. 300-400 live was pretty typical. And then, the rest were podcast. And I don't know what portion of those, listens came from, people that knew about the show through Wisconsin Carry or people that found it through the Blog Talk Radio platform. Cause when you're new with the Blog Talk Radio platform, if you get a little bit of traction, you have a few people listening, Blog Talk will, promote your show on their splash page. And so I don't know if it was people every week, you know, it was, you know, 2,000 people from across the country that were just kind of popping in through the Blog Talk platform. And then you got the, you know, 400 that were, or I shouldn't say organic, but 400 who were more, Wisconsin Carry familiar / related / referred to the show through that, that connection there. So anyway, hopefully over the winter we get a little bit better. Well, certainly I'll be a little bit more regular and a little bit more faithful with my time of start times, and maybe we can get the live listenership back up a little bit. But otherwise, I know people like to listen from the podcast at their convenience. Heard from someone this week that listens from I forget it was the Elkhorn or Fort Lauderdale, not Fort Lauderdale, Elkhorn or Lauderdale area, Lauderdale Lakes area. So great to have you listening. We've got people that listen from the Gulf Coast of Alabama. You got people listen from California. We've got people listen from across Wisconsin, Madison, Wausau. I mean, so great to have you all in and in with the show. Start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. You know the deal if you ever listened before. First 15 minutes of show here, open line, which we don't have much participation with. So here we are, not the last weekend of September, but we're getting, you know, fall just kind of creeps up on you. Like it seems like a minute ago, it was the heat of August. You know, August can tend to be sometimes some hot, humid days. So you got the heat of August, and then, Labor Day is like the last big, holiday weekend before, you know, school starts. But then Labor Day isn't like the 1st of September. It's in this, with this year, it was the 6th of September was Labor Day. So you're kind of like, and that still feels like summer because Labor Day weekend feels like a summer weekend. I mean, it's a holiday weekend. And technically it's still summer until what, like, Wednesday, I think is when autumn actually begins, the 22nd. So we're still in summer, but you're already, you know, you already chop off that first week because, and it's sometimes I think Labor Day falls. I got Ralph from Pleasant Prairie in tonight too. Ralph, great to have you in. Sometimes Labor Day falls earlier in the month of September, but this year, Labor Day being on the 6th, you're already 1 week into September, still thinking of it as, you know, summer. And then all of a sudden, like now, 2 weekends later, it's like, two weekends later. Because we had the weekend after Labor Day and then this past weekend, you're like looking at like the end of September. And it's like the leaves are starting to change. And just a few weeks ago, we were having hot, sweltering weather. I mean, this week was still somehow, today was a warm day, warm and humid day. So it doesn't feel like fall yet, but it's like, I mean, shit, fall is almost here in terms of the calendar. I mean, on Wednesday, it's fall, it's autumn. But also falls here because, you know, come October that we're going to have some chilly weather. I think they're saying some of the weather patterns are supposed to change this next week here in Wisconsin. I heard the weatherman saying that we've got some storms, fronts coming through, the kinds of fronts that make for the pattern shift in the weather this time of year that kind of makes that transition from summer to fall. Which is great. I mean, I love fall. I mean, fall is my absolute favorite time of year. I love everything about fall. which this, I mean, this weekend is a great weekend. I mean, again, Saturday was a cooler day, not that hot, sweltering summer kind of thing, just a 70, you know, two, at least this part of the state by the lake, we had a lake breeze. And then, so we had a good weekend, took the yacht out. We were going to take the, we've been meaning to try to find a weekend to take the boat, the yacht to Saugatuck, Michigan. Been looking forward to that all summer. Had to cancel a couple of times because of high waves and the days that we were going to cross it. You gotta hit it just right. It's easy for people who are retired who can just wait. Cause I mean, every week there's going to be days you can get across, but it's just, for me, I needed to hit Saturday. I need a Friday and a Sunday, Friday over, Sunday coming back. And it's been one of the two was good. Friday was nasty going over. Sunday would have been great coming back, but we need two. We need both. And Saturday can be whatever. I mean, we'd be in Saugatuck on the Kalamazoo River and we wouldn't have to worry about the waves there. So this weekend was a weekend that ironically we could have made it. The forecast was pretty good for waves both Friday and Sunday. Saturday we had some wave activity out in the lake, but Friday and Sunday were pretty good days to get over. But I had some friends in town. My one friend was up from Florida. He lives in Palm Beach. He was up from Florida. And then because he was up from, again, high school friends and some other high school friends, they all came out on the boat. So it was a good time. I'm a little frustrated. Second week in a row, but center engine, my boat has three engines, 450R racing motors. And this is the second weekend in a row that my center engine, who's actually, his name is Jack, that my engines are the three wise men, Jim, Jack, and Joe. So Jim is the starboard engine. Jack is the center engine and Joe is the port engine. And so Jack didn't want to start. Last week we were anchored down in South Shore. And then when we got done, Jack didn't want to start, turned over real fast, wouldn't start. Finally, I just shut everything down, turned all the power off, shut everything. So there's got to be some kind of computer thing. These engines have so many computer, nope, but no, through no codes, no warning, no, it just wouldn't start. And so then shut the boat off, shut everything off, turned it back on, and then the engine started. I'm like, okay, maybe it was just a glitch. Well, then they started the engine in the shop on Monday, and it started up fine, no codes, no nothing. And then on Saturday, same thing, turned it over, wouldn't start. That center engine when we were putting the boat in. Tried it three or four times, shut off all the power, turned it back on, tried it again. Then finally, like third or fourth time, it started. So there's something going on. Just the computer wasn't communicating with it. And I don't know. But anyway, that was this past weekend. But otherwise, a great day on the lake, or the harbor, I should say. We didn't make it out on the lake. Great day on the harbor on Saturday. It was kind of one of those days where, you know, here we are, mid-late, I will say this weekend was mid-late September, and you get a really nice day. Everybody with a boat takes it out because everybody knows it's one of the last days. Because then usually the end of September, people start. So here's what it takes. A lot of people, they're looking for the last nice weather day to take the boat to their winter layup marina. And so if you get to here in mid to late September, you get a nice day. That's the last day people go out. They're all going to take their boat out. But a lot of people, they don't want a boat when it's 65 degrees. I do, but they don't want to be out there when it's 65 degrees. So a day like that's their moving day when they take their boat from the marina to wherever they're going to haul out for the winter. But yeah, I was crowded with boats on Saturday, boats everywhere. And great day out on Lake Michigan. One of the better days of the summer. And part of that was just, it was very sentimental. I had some high school friends out and, you know, playing some old late 80s music and stuff that we listened to in high school and shooting the shit and reminiscing, drinking some drinks and having a good time with friends on the harbor. And we were up the Milwaukee River, KK River, Milwaukee Harbor, hung out by Summerfest for a while, good time. But another thing I realized, it was Cornfest. I think it was last weekend was Cornfest in Darien, Wisconsin, which is where I'm from, Delavan, Darien. Or Darien, as they say. See, now it's, I have clients in Chicago, and there's a Darien in Chicago. They call that suburb of Chicago Darien. But here it's called Darien, Delavan Darien, like Dairy and Ann. But anyway, so I'm torn between, do I say Darien or Darien? So in Darien, Wisconsin, they had the Corn Fest. I think it was last weekend. And it made me remember that I was going to do a segment on the show and I didn't get around to it. But did anybody see, now this is old and it's not totally an evergreen story, but did anybody see the Field of Dreams game that Major League Baseball had out in Iowa? So Field of Dreams, there's a Field of Dreams field out in Iowa, which is where the movie Field of Dreams was shot. And then they turned it into a little touristy trap, tourist destination. But then they played a Major League Baseball game out there. So I'm not a big baseball fan. I'm not a big sports fan. But it was kind of cool to see because here's this Major League game. So they had them to start the game. They have them come walking through the corn. And it's just it's cool because the vistas, they had a lot of drones up, you know, taking video for the game. And again, I could care less about the game. I don't remember who it was. Well, it was the White Sox, and I think it was the Chicago White Sox, and don't remember who they were playing. I can't remember. It doesn't matter because I don't care about sports. But it was just kind of cool. Like, the sun was going down. Here it is in Iowa. I grew up in Delavan. Corn was everywhere. I rode my bike all over the place. I don't think I ever lived more than a block when I was younger. I don't think I ever lived more than a block from corn. Maybe there was one apartment store where we lived on Tyrell Court, and that was definitely more than a block from corn. That was probably three or four blocks from corn. But when we first lived in Delavan, the first apartments we lived in, right down the end of that road, I think it was Elmhurst Avenue, cornfield. Lived for a few years on Tyrell Court in Delavan, and then corn was probably a three or four block walk. And then we moved to Park Avenue with my stepdad's Park Avenue in Delavan. And then corn was one block away, right down the end of the road. Park Avenue ended in a cornfield. And, I spent a lot of time in corn. My dad lived in Central Illinois for a little bit in Mendota, which they have a corn fest. For me, watching that Field of Dreams game in amongst with all these, especially as the sun was going down, it's in Iowa, all the pictures of the corn, the panoramic shots of the corn fields with the sun going down, man, that felt like home. I mean, I just... And usually with a Major League Baseball game, you've got vistas of city skylines, you know, high rise, maybe a river, some of the ballparks that are on rivers and such. But for the most part, it's just urban settings. So it was really cool to see all the videography. I don't want to call it cinematography, but all the videography of this baseball game being shot in the middle of nowhere in Iowa, where again it's just this little touristy trap of the Field of Dreams field where that movie was shot. So super cool. I'm sure it was super cool for the players because baseball players, like, they probably have all watched it. Just like if you're a basketball player or like in high school, you probably sat and watched Hoosiers with your team. I know I did with our basketball team in high school. We watched Hoosiers together. And for baseball players, they probably all watched Field of Dreams. That was probably, you know, one of their childhood favorites type of movie things that they'll always remember. And so very sentimental for them. But then I started thinking about how much nothing to me feels home like corn. I mean, I grew up in it, grew up near it. We played in it. We ran through it. We ran from the cops from it when I was in high school. We go to parties out in Delavan and Darien. We'd have parties and then the cops would come and we'd go running and we were running through cornfields to hide from the cops. And we, you know, detasseled it for making money. I mean, just the smell of corn. Still, when I drive down a country road, I mean, it transports me back to home when the country's just lined with cornfields. And then I remember when I was in college, I had to commute on the evenings in the summer to Janesville, to University of Wisconsin, Rock County, where I had to take a summer school class. And so that was, you know, July, flying back and forth on my motorcycle from between Delavan and Janesville through, I mean, Highway 12, Highway 11 or 12? I can't remember if it's, no, I think it's Highway 11. I think Highway 12. Yeah, no, I think it's Highway 11 that goes from Delavan to Janesville. And just, it's corn everywhere. And I still think it is. You go in west of Delavan on what was Highway 50, and then I think Highway 50 turns into Highway 11 when you get to I don't even know where Highway 50 ends. But anyway, it's just corn everywhere. And I don't know. I feel bad for people, not to sound condescending, I feel bad for people who grew up in the city because they never got to grow up around corn. And I mean, we built forts with it. There was the strips of land between cornfields that they leave, trees up, and where it's maybe separating between one farmer's field and the other. And we would build little forts in those areas and overlooking the corn. And, nothing to me feels, here in New Berlin, the western half of New Berlin, there's still a lot of cornfields. So every time I go take a ride out to my fiance's house, whether my motorcycle or my truck, I'm driving through cornfields. And yeah, I mean, nothing feels like home, like corn. And if that makes me a hillbilly, or so be it. But, and the best thing is, corn is what you make bourbon out of. I mean, by law, bourbon has to be 51% corn. That tells you how much I love corn. That's the base fermentation mash of bourbon is corn. So corn, and I don't even like corn that much. I mean, I don't eat corn that much. Corn on the cob, I find kind of annoying. Eating it, it feels, I don't know, it just seems like a lot. I don't like eating with my hands. I don't like eating off the cob. I don't like eating off the bone. Like a drumstick, I find kind of annoying too. Like I like to bite in to take a huge monster bite of something. Just to nibble on corn, on the corn of the cob, that's just annoying, getting that shit in your teeth. And again, to me, same kind of annoying as eating a drumstick. You got to, I want to just bite in and just get my mouth full of, you know, meat. If it's corn, I want to take a big bite of corn. You can't take a big bite of corn on the cob. You got to take a little bite of corn on the cob. It just, so yeah, I don't even like it to eat that much. I think corn is best served fermented in bourbon. But yeah, nothing feels like home like corn. So now here, fall, the corn's starting to brown up a little bit. The leaves are starting to change colors. And I'm thinking, man, in October, we can get some pretty cold weather. End of October, we can get snow. I mean, we're just at the very end of summer here. It's flying past. It has flown past. We're going to be in fall in a couple days. We'll get teased with some warm weather maybe here and there. We probably won't hit 80 again. We'll have some 70s, hopefully, if we're lucky, by the before the end of the season here. But fall is my absolute favorite time of year. Dry air, low humidity. Hopefully you get a freeze early and then warm again, because then the bugs are gone and then you got some nice dry but warm weather. Had a great weekend this weekend, played golf Friday, played golf Saturday. Where did I play Friday? I forget where I played. Oh, I played at Whitnall Golf Course on Friday. Mosquitoes are terrible. Played with the fiance at Edgewood Golf Course today. But anyway, enough about that. One more little bit of small talk I was going to do. Tools. Like, I love tools. I mean, I guess most guys do. Last week at the marina, some guy was his battery in his boat was dead, needed to jump start or whatever. He also needed a wrench. I don't know if he was swapping batteries or whatever. But so first he asked me for jumper cables. I said, no, I didn't have them. Then I realized, oh, wait, I do have jumper cables in my truck. So I'm going in the back of my truck. And then he's like, oh, his wife found someone else with jumper cables. And he's like, oh, but do you have a wrench? I'm like, oh, sure, I have a wrench. So I've got this little toolbox, tool bag that sits over on the side of the bed of my truck with, and I have a few tools in it, And I just love having tools. See, for me, nothing is like more gratifying than when you keep a little tool thing handy and then you need it. You know, I always carry my Leatherman in my pocket, which I love. I use that all the time, but it's just, there's something gratifying about being prepared. You know, you carry the Leatherman around all the time, so you have it when you need it, and then you need it, you need to quick tighten the screw or whatever. You don't got to go run into the other room, run into the garage, run in wherever, just pull it out of your pocket and boom. Same thing, if I'm on my tailgate, I got, you know, a knife back there. I got a bottle opener back there that's in this little tool bag thing. So I got this wrench. So I borrowed the wrench. And I, you know, here's the thing. When you borrow someone something, you know you ain't going to get it back. But I said, hey, I'm leaving. When you're done with the wrench, can you just, my tailgate of my truck will be open. Can you just throw it in the tailgate? He's like, sure. Well, of course, so we take the boat out. This is last weekend. Take the boat out, come back. Of course, my wrench wasn't returned. It's a little Crescent wrench, a $2-3 wrench if you buy probably the cheapy one that was bought from Home Depot or something. But it's just like, damn, you know, borrow stuff, make a point to get it back. But people are so self-centered. Like, see me, if someone does me a favor, like, it's top of mind to repay that favor. If someone was to borrow me a wrench, I mean, my God, I would go out of my way to make sure they got their wrench back. So this guy doesn't return my wrench. So now I'm missing a little Crescent wrench that I keep at the back of my truck. And I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, wait, now I'm going to need that thing. Something's going to come up and I'm going to need that little Crescent wrench. Keep me to stop by Home Depot, pick up another Crescent wrench to replace it. So I did the other night, whatever it was, Friday, going to Home Depot, go to the tool section, which is just like being a kid in a candy store, looking for a wrench to replace my little tiny, that's all I was going in there for. One little Crescent wrench, $3.50. You buy the little El Cheapo they got there. And then I start looking at, oh, here's this combo wrench and socket ratchet set. Oh, I grabbed that. That was $20. And then, oh, here's a little lever pry bar. I don't have a pry bar in my little tool thing my little tool bag. I might grab that, you know, the tiny pry bar. And then they had a Leatherman. I've got a Leatherman that I've been carrying for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. They had a Leatherman wave there at Home Depot. Ah, look at that. I grabbed that. I grabbed the Leatherman wave. Then what else did I end up buying? Then they had this, I needed a couple other wrenches. I'm like, oh, I need a channel locks. I do have a big channel locks in my truck, but I need a smaller channel locks to put in my little tool bag. So it's not in my big tool chest. That's like way out of the far back of the bed of my truck. So I'm just, anyway, $289 later, I leave with all a bunch of tools to throw in my little, because I started thinking about all the things I didn't have in my little tool bag. But it's just, it's that feeling. And I think probably a lot of pro-gun folks, a lot of carry folks feel the same way. Like, you just love to be prepared. You know, it can take some minor little thing, or maybe even something that would be a major frustration, major bummer to your day. Like tire plugs. I keep a set of tire plugs, the little tire plug kit in the back of my truck. So if you run over a nail, I mean, a flat tire could ruin your day, but I've got an air compressor in my truck and I got that. I mean, so I'll be back in business in, you know, 20 minutes. And it's happened. I was on my way out to the lake one time and there was a nail and the tire pressure warning thing goes off my truck, pull over the side of the road. I can hear it hissing out, grab my plug kit, plug the tire. It took about 3 minutes. Started to pump it up with my little compressor, but then that was going too slow. So I got it up to just like 30 PSI, where it was close enough to go to the gas station. And then, when I got to the gas station, sorry, I got a silent flip phone here, got to the gas station, then, used their air compressor to pump it up to 75 PSI, which is what my truck tires run at. And on with the day, went and launched my boat and blah, blah, blah. I had a good day. So, but it just, when you're prepared, it can, you know, take a day that could have gotten, or a situation that could have gotten to be really annoying and make it a non-situation. I just love that. So I just love being prepared, love having these tools at the handy. We were on my boat and we were taking on the cruise up to Door County this summer. We're going along. We left Milwaukee. And then just, you know, you're always jostling around, bouncing off waves and stuff. And then we got partway up and then there's a little set screw that holds the chrome handle of the bathroom door on the yacht. And so my daughter had to go to the bathroom. She goes down there and the handle comes off in her hand. And so just all the repeated, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of wave strikes, just enough that wiggling just wiggled that set screw loose in there. And then the handle fell off. And so she couldn't open the bathroom door. And so I put the boat into like basically at an idle speed or a slow, very slow speed. Didn't bother to turn the autopilot on. I think I had Kim just keep it, you know, going. Run down there. I've got a tool kit, tool bin in my boat with every kind of tool I could conceivably think I would need, Allen wrenches, whatever. And so there I am. I click, you know, find the set screw and find an Allen wrench and fix it on the fly. And so 5 minutes later, we're back in business. My daughter can get in the bathroom and pee, and we're on our way. And but it's just that kind of thing. If you don't have a toolkit handy, then you're waiting until you get to a marina. You're spending 20 minutes going around asking people or more, 30 minutes looking for a, you know, it just, and in the meantime, you can't get in the bathroom and the girl's got to pee. So then you just, but having tools, being prepared, like I just, to me, it scratches the itch. So yeah, I walk into Home Depot to replace a little crescent wrench and walk out $289 later with all kinds of stuff. But now my tool bag and the back of my truck is stacked. Because I've got a tool bin, like a big rolling bin, like those big rolling bin toolboxes that's in my truck. But it's so hard to get to that. You got to, it always ends up working its way to the back of the bed. And so you can't reach it from, you got to get up. You have to take I've got a tonneau cover. You got a foldable tonneau cover. You have to fold that, go up there, get it. Just, you know, anyway. So love that preparedness. There's nothing more utilitarian than buying tools and throwing them in your truck and then being prepared for anything. But so anyway, that was Friday night and my $3.50 trip to Home Depot that turned into $300 of tools later. So next thing I was going to talk about tonight was Rebecca Clefishy. I call her Clefishy. Like, look, Rebecca Clefish, she was lieutenant governor. I think she was in the assembly before that, before she was lieutenant governor. I talked about her on the show last week. I talked about all the reasons. She's just as establishment gets. And I don't think she's the maverick we need. She's not the ball buster we need. We need someone that's willing and able to buck the party establishment. And that's not Rebecca Clefish. She owes her existence to the Republican Party establishment. Mm-hmm. And this is just a little tiny thing, but I just found it really annoying. So Rebecca Clefish, Becky Clefish, she was on Up Front with Adrian Peterson. This is Channel 12 runs this Up Front. I think they run it Sunday mornings, then they rerun it at like 11 o'clock on Sunday evenings. So I'm going to play this. I didn't cut the clip and put the clip into my show mix on the Blog Talk Radio board. So I'm just going to play it on my computer because I figured you guys would be able to hear it. So I got two guys in the chat here. You guys, let me know if you can hear this okay. This is Rebecca Clefish being interviewed by Adrian Peterson on the Upfront TV show. And she's going to be asked, Adrian Peterson asks her about Joe Biden being elected in Wisconsin. So this is the clip from, this is the first person you hear is going to be Adrian Peterson from Channel 12. On the Upfront show, the second person you hear, the second woman's voice, will be Rebecca Clefish. So I'm going to play this for you now.
When it comes to the 2020 election, do you believe that Joe Biden won Wisconsin?
I do.
And what do you...
So that's the clip. I'll play it one more time just in case. That might have been a little bit loud, so I'm going to play it maybe a little bit softer here. Play it one more time.
When it comes to the 2020 election, do you believe that Joe Biden won Wisconsin?
I do.
And what do you...
So that's Rebecca Clefish. When asked, when it comes to the 2020 election, do you think that Joe Biden won Wisconsin? Becca Clefish, I do. She nods her head, all enthusiastic. It just chaps my ass. You know, Rebecca Clefish, and you guys in the chat, let me know if you could hear that okay, if it was too loud, if it blew away my mic and distorted, if you were able to hear that okay. You know, that was her answer to the question. And then she didn't expand upon it in that. Adrian Peterson asked her a follow-up question, and then she said, well, what I think we need to do is we need to, and if you go to the Well-Armed Radio MeWe page, you can watch, there's actually on the Wisconsin Carry page, there's the whole clip, or the whole segment, I should say, the whatever it is, the 15-minute segment that she was on up front. But, you know, Rebecca Clefish, she wants to be the next governor of Wisconsin, but she's towing the media dictated line, like the political insider she is, because you just can't express a modicum of disbelief. You can't express a modicum of hesitation. You can't express a modicum of challenge to whether or not Joe Biden really won Wisconsin. Because if you do, oh, you're going to rile up all those rubes that are too stupid to think for themselves and that they take all their cues from the TV news and whoever. Congressman, no, you can't say, that you think Joe Biden might not have won because, oh, that will just, you know, cause an insurrection amongst those rubes out there. It's irresponsible to, it annoys me to no end that Rebecca Clefish is just so eager and willing to, maybe she really believes it. I don't think so. Cause you, if Rebecca Clefish really believes that Joe Biden won Wisconsin, if she doesn't have any doubts that Joe Biden won Wisconsin, cause she expressed no doubt there. She didn't say, oh, I'm not sure. She didn't say, well, there's some irregularities. She didn't say, well, you know, I have some concerns. She didn't say, well, there's a whole bunch of stuff that seems really fishy. She didn't say, you know, there's documented cases of substantial vote fraud here in Wisconsin, which there are. Dan O'Donnell's documented them on his show on WISN. Nope. Instead, she just, and look, nationwide, Wisconsin's, we haven't perhaps had the smoking gun that we have in other states. But like, I mean, Atlanta in Georgia, the ballots being pulled out from under the table and scanned after everybody else left the room, after the poll watchers left, Arizona, that just all the irregularities that people were talking about there. I mean, just in Wisconsin, 150,000 people on the voter rolls that shouldn't be. That's the kind of shit that when Rebecca Clefish, this is what I wanted to hear from Rebecca Clefish. Do you think Joe Biden won Wisconsin? I want Rebecca Clefish to say, I have my doubts. I can't say she should say, I mean, either she wanted to say, well, he was declared the winner, but I have my doubts. She could equivocate a little bit and I'm not going to hang her. She didn't equivocate one bit. She just, do you believe Biden won Wisconsin? I do. Fuck, man. Becky, you establishment media suck up, you know, she's got that smarmy politician, prissy act going already. I mean, so if you think Becky Clefish is going to challenge the Madison Marsh and be a bold fighter for the truth and the people, think again. If you think Becky Clefish is going to challenge the media lies, think again. She couldn't have been quicker to promote the big lie. Not a moment's hesitation, not a, you know, I have concerns about the November 3rd presidential election. 100% immediate validation of the big lie for Adrian Peterson. And here's the thing. Adrian Peterson's got to know that Becky Clefish, because if Becky Clefish doesn't have doubts about the validity of the vote fraud in Wisconsin and that the margin of victory was smaller than the margin of fraud, when she ought to know there's 150,000 people on the voter rolls that they refused to purge before the election, and we still don't know how many of those people have voted because we haven't had an audit in Wisconsin, and the media scoffs and guffaws every time you talk about an audit, and then the big lie, their big lie is that Trump won. Their big lie is that Joe Biden didn't win. Meanwhile, Donald Trump won every, or was it 19 of 20 or 21 of 22 of the bellwether counties that always indicate which way we're going for president. All those indicators of the things that tell you who's going to win, Trump won, made massive, massive increases in gains with the black vote, which should have made him unbeatable by Biden, increased his vote total. They said if he got 3 million more votes than the 65 million he got in 2016, he couldn't lose, and he gets 12 million more to 75,000 or 75 million votes. I mean, just thing after thing. So there's the big picture things that say, I don't have to restate this to you guys. You know, you've seen it all, you know, but all of them, I'm just refreshing the memory because for all that stuff, and Becky Clefish can't say that she can't express a modicum of doubt when it comes to that election. She's on Adrian Peterson's show and she's, do you think Joe Biden won Wisconsin? I do. That's a pretty good Becky Clefish impression, don't you? I do. It's just, it's so annoying. It's, you know, her perky political, you know, posturing. So if Rebecca Clefish doesn't have doubts that Joe Biden won Wisconsin, she's too stupid to be governor. And if she does have doubts, but she's just towing the media line, then she's too much of a media suck up to be governor. And she's too much of a, she's too afraid to speak her mind to be governor. This, even before she said this, I know Becky Clefish is going to be an establishment loyalist towing the party line. The reason that we couldn't get pro-gun bills passed is because of Scott Walker and Robin Voss. If you think that Becky Clefish, after being Scott Walker's understudy for 8 years, and being a darling of the establishment Republicans in Wisconsin, if you think she's going to be a ball buster and push constitutional carry, push school grounds carry, man, you have another think coming. And I know some friends of mine who think that Becky Clefish is going to be oh so pro-gun. I don't think so for one sec. I think she's wants nothing to do with school grounds carry. I hope she proves me wrong. I don't think she, well, hopefully she won't be governor. I hope that, you know, Kevin Nicholson is, I believe, going to enter the primary because I think Ron Johnson is going to run for reelection. I hope Ron Johnson runs for reelection. We need Ron Johnson to run for reelection. And then that would mean that Nicholson is going to run for governor. He'll have the backing of the U-lines. He'll have a lot of money to put into it. And I think he can beat Becky Clefish up and down the road. But you're going to have to buck that Republican establishment, that Republican Party, who's going to push a candidate who ain't going to win, who ain't going to attract across the aisle like Kevin Nicholson, I believe, could. She's an insider. She's going to toe that party line and play Democrat light, trying to, you know, suck up on and doing all the things that you can't win on. Staying away from the crime issue. So I still didn't hear from Ralph or Lon. Hopefully you guys on the chat here, hopefully playing that clip, you heard it okay. But that's just so disappointing to hear from Becky Clefish. Not surprised at all. But what does it have to do with guns? She doesn't have the balls to express doubt that Biden didn't win, might not have won Wisconsin. There might have been the margin that the fraud in Wisconsin might have been bigger than the margin of victory. Again, we need something better than that. We need more of a fighter than that. We need something other than Becky Clefish. Of course, she'll be better than Tony Evers. Of course, I'm going to vote for her. If she wins the primary, I'll hold my nose and vote for her against Tony Evers. But I really, really, it'll be a Pyrrhic victory. If she's governor, we haven't won all that much. And that said, I mean, I don't think Kevin Nicholson's is like the, okay, Ralph heard it loud and clear. Excellent. I don't think Kevin Nicholson is a Second Amendment champion, but I don't think he's beholden to the Republican Party establishment. So I do think that with a push from the legislature, we could get school grounds carry to his desk and he would sign it. Next thing I was going to talk about here tonight was the Kyle Rittenhouse hearing. So I watched the Kyle Rittenhouse hearing, whatever day it was, Thursday or Friday. I mean, the ADA, Binger, I forget his first name, but Thomas, I think it's Thomas Binger. This douche, the assistant district attorney who prosecuted the Guy Smith case. The Guy Smith case was the one where Wisconsin Carry supported and funded trucker going through the weigh station in Kenosha, gun open carried on the seat of his truck. They can see it through the aerial cameras that shine down into the cab of the truck. They order him to the back for a further inspection. When they get up in his truck, they see the gun. He gets charged with a concealed carry violation. Wisconsin Carry funded that. And then Binger is the ADA who made – so there was a hearing, and Binger shows up to the hearing for Guy Smith's trial, thinking it's just going to be a rubber stamp conviction on the concealed carry thing, completely unprepared. John Monroe shows up to represent Guy Smith, makes the case citing statutes in front of the judge, saying that basically here's the statute in Wisconsin and the statutory language that makes it, we think, clear that you don't need a concealed carry license to open carry a pistol in your vehicle. We don't think you need a license to carry a pistol in your vehicle at all, even if it's concealed in Wisconsin. The judge hears the argument from John Monroe, looks at Binger and says, I can't argue with that logic. And then as a mercy, he recesses for like 2 months or something to give Binger a chance to do his research, which he should have dismissed the case right there, or should have ruled in favor of Guy Smith right there. If the defense wasn't prepared, I can't imagine they would have given, if the defense was caught off guard. But here's Binger thinking he's going in there for the equivalent of a traffic ticket, rubber stamp conviction. And then, oh, Guy Smith has an attorney. Oh, he's got a legal argument to make. Oh, judge, I need some time. I mean, he caught with his pants down, and the judge gives him time. And so then Binger goes back to do his legal research that he should have done before the hearing in the first place, before the trial in the first place, and then realizes he has no comeback. And then instead of just dropping the charges, John Monroe flies in for the follow-up hearing, the continuation of the trial. That's what it was. The trial was continued, which was a month or two later. John Monroe flies in from Atlanta. Guy Smith drives down from Wausau, and then they get to court. The judge, comes in. They see, and then Binger says, "Yeah, we've decided to drop the charges." And he could have done that 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks before, and not had. But he just did it to be a dick. Just wanted John Monroe, Wisconsin carried after. Fork the money over because we paid John Monroe's expenses to come up, have guys who's coming, just to be a dick. So this is the guy who's prosecuting the Kyle Rittenhouse case, this Thomas Binger. He's the assistant district attorney. But the Rittenhouse hearing is going on, and they're arguing over what evidence is going to be admitted. And some of the evidence that's going to be admitted was that there's a use of force expert who the defense wants to bring in to talk about what constitutes use of deadly force, justified use of deadly force, so on and so forth. Binger also wanted to have, the judge ruled in favor that they can have this defense expert. And then Binger wanted to admit video evidence of Kyle Rittenhouse outside of a CVS pharmacy months before making a comment about using his gun to shoot a shoplifter or something. And then Binger also wanted to admit a video showing Kyle Rittenhouse getting involved in an altercation between, I guess Kyle's sister was involved with an altercation with another girl, and Kyle stepped into the middle of it. And so then, when the judge is asking the ADA Binger why he wants to admit this evidence, these videos, and the ADA Binger says the defendant clearly doesn't understand. This is paraphrasing what Binger said, the assistant district attorney for Kenosha. The defendant doesn't understand self-defense. Defendant has a history of inserting himself into situations that were not his concern. I wanted to reach through the TV. I was watching on the computer. I wanted to reach through my computer monitor and slap Binger upside the head because he's the one that doesn't understand the statutes in Wisconsin. He's the one that understands self-defense. The self-defense statutes say right in them, defense of self and others. You are allowed by law to insert yourself into situations that aren't your concern. If you're driving down the street and you see a woman getting beat up like the guy did in West Dallas, I forget his name, Charlie Blackmore. If you're driving down the street, driving down Lincoln Avenue in West Dallas, and you see a guy beating up his girlfriend at the bus stop at 11 at night or 1 in the morning or whatever it was, and you're coming off third shift, and you have a right, a legal right, to stop and intervene on behalf of someone else. Defense of self and others is in the statutes. So when Binger says the defendant doesn't understand self-defense, the defendant has a history of inserting himself into situations that were not his concern, that is such bullshit. You are allowed to act in defense of others. Binger is the one that doesn't understand self-defense and doesn't understand the statutes if he doesn't think that you're allowed to. That's just this pretentious, pathetic mentality of liberals is that that citizens don't have this right that citizens are supposed to sit back and be victims and not act. Defendant, he wants to admit videos showing Kyle inserting himself into situations that he wasn't a part of. That's essence of self-defense, is inserting yourself. I shouldn't say the essence of self-defense. The essence of self-defense is defending yourself. But the essence, you're allowed to act in defense of someone else if the same conditions are met in terms of using deadly force. You're allowed to act with less than deadly force on behalf of someone else. if your daughter is getting beat up, you don't have to say, well, it's not me. I don't understand self-defense. It's, you know, would Binger say that? Well, he's inserting himself. No, it's if Kyle's sister is getting in an altercation, he's allowed to intervene on behalf of his sister. All the, you know, conditions in that situation, he didn't use deadly force, but all the conditions about, you know, defense of self and others have to apply. You know, when it comes to deadly force, be innocent of instigation. No lesser force will do. Retreat if possible, not a legal requirement. And grave danger, great bodily harm must be imminent. So if you're going to use deadly force to protect someone else, the person that you're protecting had to have not instigated the situation, didn't have the opportunity to retreat or wasn't able to retreat. And then no lesser force will do. Deadly force was the only force that would have sufficed to deliver from evil. And then the threat had to be imminent. It had to be current now, not like, oh, in 5 minutes, not someone said, I'm going to go get a gun and come back and shoot you. So you shoot them first. No, grave danger, great bodily harm has to be imminent. There's nothing, and it's not even the district attorney, assistant district attorney, wanted to make it seem like that was a character flaw. Wanting to intervene to protect someone else isn't a character flaw. That's a virtue. It's not a vice. It's a virtue. If you want to, if you're willing to step in and protect someone else, even though you're not in danger, that's why my grandfather got the Bronze Star for valor on the beaches of Normandy. He was in a safe place. He didn't have to go driving his Jeep onto the beach, taking gunfire while he did it to pick up wounded soldiers, but he did. He got in his Jeep, left a place of safety to drive onto the beach and pick up wounded soldiers and drive them to safety, and that's why he got the Bronze Star. If someone is willing to insert themselves to protect and expose themselves to protect someone else, that's not a vice, that's a virtue, but Binger makes it sound like it's a vice. Also, the judge ruled that those videos of Kyle getting in an altercation with a girl a couple of weeks before, those were not admissible. The judge also ruled that there's the videos of Kyle Rittenhouse at Pudgy's, I think it's Pudgy's Pub in Racine County or Kenosha County somewhere, I forget what, where exactly the location of that pub is, but after one of his hearings, after he was arrested, after one of his hearings, he went to that bar and the Proud Boys were there, supposedly, and he took pictures with them, made a gesture of the okay sign with them, which is the troll gesture. That was a joke for the white power. Like, we're going to troll. It's actually just you make the okay sign, then the W, the three fingers make it of your pinky, your ring, and your middle finger. Those make the W, and then the okay with your thumb and your index and your forearm, that makes the P, so that stands for white power. It was a joke. It's the Google 4chan okay prank. It was a prank. And now the media is like, oh, it's a symbol of white supremacy. No, it's a prank, you idiots. And you guys have all fallen for it. And but the judge ruled that they couldn't admit those videos. I mean, the defense is trying to, you know, portray Kyle as some associations with the Proud Boys, but the ADA even acknowledged that he has no evidence of any connection on or before August 25th when the event in Kenosha occurred. And so I was really impressed by the judge in Kyle's hearing. The judge makes the commentary about the danger of evidence like this, evidence of, you know, after the, and the judge even said, look, if outside groups have taken an interest in the case because of the issues that are at hand here, and they want to show their support for Kyle, that has nothing to do with the events of August 25th. And then Binger says, well, no, if he was, these Proud Boys have a history of inciting violence and looking for fights. And so, but again, the judge said, do you have any evidence that he had any association with the Proud Boys prior to August 25th? And Binger says no. And the judge is like, well, okay, well then I'm not going to admit this evidence. And the judge even used the term about the danger. He used the term danger when he talked about evidence like that. There's a danger in using this evidence to prejudice people against Kyle Rittenhouse and make him seem like, and again, that's one of the things I believe is that Milwaukee TV is going to be, because they called him a white supremacist. They called Kyle Rittenhouse, Gwen Moore, congressman, called him a white supremacist on Twitter. And I think those people are going to get sued after Kyle is, well, hopefully is acquitted. If Kyle's acquitted, and I hope that he is, he should be. But the judge even made reference to gang associations when he's got local criminals accused of a crime in front of him in court at trial, defense being, you know, criminal defendants, references to gang associations, and the judge said how he often prohibits those kind of references when it comes to, did this person commit a crime of whatever, a crime of robbery, a crime of car theft? Just an association with a gang, that would prejudice the jury. Okay, did he or did he not steal this car? Well, maybe the evidence isn't too clear, but then if you can show clear evidence that he's a gang member, oh, well, then we might as well convict him because he's a gang member. And even though the evidence wasn't too clear that he stole this car, on the actual facts of that, the fact that it's pretty verifiable, pretty well documented now that he's a gang member. Okay, well, then we're willing to convict. The judge called that kind of evidence dangerous. He used that term dangerous. So I'm impressed with the judge in this Rittenhouse case. He also ruled, and I was kind of wishing that there was a way, he ruled that the defense could not introduce evidence that Rosenbaum, the first person that Kyle Rittenhouse shot, that he was a convicted child molester. The judge, they wanted to make reference to the fact that he was a convicted felon for the purposes of saying that he was trying to get Kyle's gun, that he, because he couldn't get one himself because he's a prohibited person. The judge said, well, certainly we're... The judge considered letting in evidence that he was a convicted felon, but certainly was not going to, he made this clear right away, was not going to admit, let evidence be admitted that he was a convicted child molester, because that would be very prejudicial. And the judge even said, he goes, it could be that some jury members would think, oh, you know, that his life, you know, that they wouldn't, that would change their perception or a feeling of whether he deserved it, you know, deserved to be shot because he's a child molester. So the judge was clear that he was going to make this about the facts of the case and stick to the judge even said if he introduced the evidence on, if he allowed the introduction of evidence about Kyle Rittenhouse, the video of him outside of a CVS a month before the Kenosha incident where he said he wished he had his gun to shoot a bank robber, where they the video evidence of him, or the, I shouldn't say evidence, the video of him getting involved in an altercation that his sister had with another girl. The judge even said there, if he admitted that he thinks he'd get overruled on appeal. And also the evidence of, with him being at the bar with the Proud Boys, if he put that in, that would be prejudicial to the jury. Okay, maybe Kyle did or did. It becomes less about whether Kyle did or didn't act in self-defense and more about, oh, is he really a white supremacist? If there's someone on the jury that has a big problem with, you know, is big into the Black Lives Matter and believes that everybody's a white supremacist in hiding, you know, that could really prejudice a jury or jury members. Running short on time here, and I do have two more things. One more thing. I got to finish my topic about AOC and her gown at the Met Gala, and I should have put in for 90 minutes of show, and I only put in for 60 minutes. So if you do want to catch it on the podcast, I'm going to lose my live feed here in about a minute and 30 seconds. But the last thing I'm going to talk about is Joy Behar and her comments on The View about AOC and her wearing of a gown that says "Tax the Rich" to the Met Gala there in, I believe it was in New York where this Met Gala occurred. So thank you guys who tuned in, Ralph and Lon and anybody else who's tuned in live. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great night. And if you do want to catch the podcast after the show, you can hear my last segment here on AOC and her dress and her little stunt for her little stunt at the Met Gala. So here's what I'm going to have to say about this. So Joy Behar, she is on The View, and she goes and she's going to defend AOC for wearing a dress to the Met Gala, that a white dress that on the dress it had the red words printed, tax the rich. Joy Behar, she makes this as she's defending AOC for wearing the dress or showing her support for AOC. Hang on, I gotta stop. I just opened up the link here on Fox News. I'll read this article on Fox News and you can, and then I'll respond. This is from FoxNews.com. The View's Joy Behar defended Rep. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez amid criticism she received for wearing a tax the rich dress to Monday night's Met Gala. Critics blasted AOC as oblivious for having worn the dress while attending such an elite event, which was attended by the who's who in Hollywood and the fashion industry. Okay, so maybe this was in, I don't know if this was in Hollywood or if it was in New York, this Met Gala took place, but quote, nothing captures the hypocrisy of our ruling class more than wearing a dress that says tax the rich at a gala whose ticket price is $35,000 for the uninvited. Laugh out loud, these people are such clowns. This is Arielle Davidson, a senior policy analyst at the Jewish Institute for National Security of America. She tweeted this. Another person, and this is, I hate this of media, but this is Fox News. They now cite just some random person's social media comments on Twitter as, I don't want to call it evidence because not as documentation. It just, the number of times where mainstream media now uses social media as a topic, as a to make their point. I don't know. I just, any old random person can post something on Twitter and then it makes its way into Fox News as indicative of the sentiment. I don't know. It's something that bothers me about that, but I don't know who Ed Morrissey is. Maybe hotair.com/Ed Morrissey. Maybe he's part of this hotair.com. Maybe this guy's more of a talking head public figure than I'm aware of, because I've never heard of the name Ed Morrissey. He says, nothing says a woman of the people like wearing an ugly designer gown festooned with class warfare slogan to a $30,000 per ticket gala event. The definition of privilege, wearing a tax the rich designer dress to a $30,000 a ticket gala. But Joy Behar, if you don't know her, it's Joy Behar, it's a word that rhymes with runt. Joy Behar said she approved of the Congresswoman's apparel. And Joy Behar said on the View, she said, I don't mind it. The liberal host called, I'm reading from FoxNews.com here, called Ocasio-Cortez brave for wearing the dress in a crowd of the rich Hollywood elite. Quote, she goes into a situation where people are rich and she basically says, we're taxing you, Behar said laughing. Quote, that takes courage. It takes balls to do that. Behar compared the scene to her, AOC, or no, to Behar compared the scene to her going into the Republican National Committee and saying Trump lost. That's just a joke. This Joy Behar's, she fails on logic and parallel comparisons on so many levels here. To say it's equivalent to wearing a Trump lost dress to a Republican event, that's not even close. And to say it takes balls to wear that to the gala, it takes no balls to wear a woke lefty dress to a party full of woke lefties. Woke lefties all know the gig at this Met Gala. Yeah, they're rich. They're rich woke lefties. They all know the gig. They all know they're hypocrites. Woke lefties say diversity, and then they coalesce behind old white people like Biden and Hillary and Tony Evers. Woke leftists say mandate masks, and then they take them off for their parties or for the moment the cameras are gone. Lefties know the gig. They know it's all about the show. And here's the other thing. Lefties also know that the rich don't pay taxes. And obviously, the rich pay taxes, but taxes don't hurt the rich. These mega millionaires and billionaires, lefties, they don't pay income tax. because that's what Ocasio-Cortez is talking about. She's talking about income tax. These people have so much money in the bank. They make their, they're not getting a paycheck in a W-2. They're already rich. They're already set for life. They already have more money than they're ever going to spend. They already make more money on capital gains, so they don't have income tax. They don't get a W-2. They're making more money on capital gains than they spend every year. And they want to tax the rich because income taxes hurt and hit those who haven't yet built the golden egg to sit on for the rest of their life. You make 200 grand as a plumber, you get the fuck taxed out of you. You make 100 grand as a W-2 employee, taxes hit you like a rhinoceros. You know, you're a W-2 employee and you're, I call it the working rich. People that make a lot of money, but they don't yet have that big wealth. They have a good annual income, you know, six-figure annual income, which in some parts of this country isn't that much. But you're a W-2 employee. You're taxed at the highest rates. You don't have, you know, you're not getting money through under capital gains. You don't have the write-offs and the pass-throughs and everything else that people that own businesses do. But the uber rich, they want to tax the working rich because it keeps the income taxes keep the working rich from getting to be uber rich. Either way, it doesn't take any balls to wear that lefty propaganda to a lefty event. Let's see. Try wearing a Trump gown to the Met Gala. That takes balls. Try being a conservative actress or athlete and wearing a Make America Great Again hat anywhere. Try being a conservative in Hollywood and coming out of the closet as a conservative, as a Republican, and watch your career disappear. Watch your endorsements disappear. Watch the opportunity to do anything professionally disappear. AOC had nothing to risk wearing that gown. She wasn't going to lose her elected position by wearing that gown to the Met Gala. She wasn't going to lose any endorsements. She wasn't going to lose any support. She wasn't even actually offending anybody there. When AOC wears a gown that says tax the rich to the Met Gala, she wasn't offending any of the rich people there because they know the gig. They know she's not talking about her. She's talking about income taxes that hit the W-2 employees and the working rich. They're not talking about wealth tax here. You know, Jeff Bezos, his stock price goes up in 20% and the guy's worth $6 billion more than he was the year before. That's not taxed. That $6 billion of wealth, that's not taxed. Now, if he turns around and sells stock, then he might pay capital gains on it. I don't know what the rules are on stock that you own. Like, is it your own company? You started the company. So I don't know what the basis. You know, if you buy Amazon stock at $1,000 a share and you sell it at $2,000 a share, you got $1,000 of capital gains there. You pay your whatever it is, 20, long-term capital gains, whatever that is, 20%. You pay your 20% on that. So if Bezos wants to, but I don't know. For Bezos, I don't know what the basis is. Because so you're, if you buy stock for $1,000, that's your basis. You sell it for $2,000, your base. You don't pay 20% of the $2,000 you sell it for. You only pay 20% of the capital gains portion, which was the $1,000. So I don't know what Jeff Bezos' basis is for the stock that he owns in Amazon. But if Amazon stock goes up 50% and because of all the stock he owns, he's worth $6 billion more, he could turn around and sell $6 billion worth of Amazon stock and he only pays 20% on that. He doesn't give a fuck if you take income taxes and raise those. Now, they are talking about raising capital gains slightly too. But again, Jeff Bezos doesn't care about that. He just donated $50 million to St. Jude or whatever today. He doesn't care. Here's the other thing. Have you seen the television commercial where they're saying, if you've got money to joyride in space, you can pay your fair share. And they show pictures of Jeff Bezos getting out of, and I think they show Richard Branson also, but they show these billionaires getting out of their little space capsules. Do you think Jeff Bezos is offended by that commercial? Not a bit. Jeff Bezos isn't offended one bit by a commercial that says, if you can afford to joyride in space, you can pay your fair share. Was it Warren Buffett or someone who said that he's more than happy to pay his fair share? Well, they never just turn around and send in a bigger check to the feds. They don't, some of these billionaires don't object when the taxes rates go up because they're already uber rich. And, you know, their tax bill is just a rounding error in their net worth. Because you're only taxed on your annual income. So if you're worth $10 billion, you don't pay tax on the $10 billion you're worth. You pay taxes on what you earn that year. So if you're worth $10 billion and you earned another billion, and depending on how you earned it, you probably only pay capital gains if you were to sell stock of that, you know. So if your net worth increases by $6 billion, you may, and you don't, you know, you're only paying income on like let's say if you haven't sold any stock, then you're not even paying capital gains. If you've got some money in the bank and your interest rate is 3% and you make $50 million in interest, then you pay capital gains. No, I take it back. That's income tax. Interest on money that you have invested is income. So that you'll pay your tax rate on. So if you made $50 million of interest on the $10 million of cash you've got in the bank, you made you wouldn't make $50 million interest on $10 million. If you've got $10 billion of cash in the bank, and you paid $50 million, you made $50 million in interest at whatever the interest rate would be, 2% on your, you know, obviously people that have $10 billion, they don't have it sitting in a money market or a savings account that's going to get, or a CD, they have it in other things. But for whatever amount of money, let's say, I don't know how much money billionaires keep in their checking account or their savings account, or I don't know if they have interest bearing accounts, like we do. You know, I have a savings account and I think I don't know what it gets. I think it's 1% or 2%. It's nothing. It used to be, I had a money market account. Well, that's what it, my money market account. I used to have a money market account that got like 4.5%. That was back in like 2004. I mean, you could make a nice chunk of interest every couple months off that. But anyway, you know, it's not brave for AOC to wear a woke lefty dress. Okay, I'll tell you this. Is it brave for AOC to wear a BLM dress to a gathering of a bunch of white liberals? Not at all. Is it okay? I got a better one. If AOC wore a white privilege dress to a party full of white liberals, is that brave? Not a bit. Because the white liberals all know they're privileged and they all know it's a game. They all know it's a political angle. They're not offended that AOC wore a white liberal, a white privileged dress to a gathering of white liberals. They're not offended in the slightest. There's nothing brave about what the stunt that AOC pulled. Again, you want to see someone brave, wear a Trump, whatever that actress was, wear a Trump dress to a red carpet event. That's fucking brave, because you're going to get blacklisted in Hollywood. You're going to lose endorsements. You're not going to get calls for things. So that's brave. For Tom Brady to come out and say he's a Trump supporter, that would be brave, because he's going to take hell for it. For anybody in Hollywood to come out and say they're a Trump supporter, that's brave, because you're going to get mega backlash. It could affect your business interests, your income, your, you know. So Joy Behar thinks that – Joy Behar doesn't even know what brave is. And it's just this, you know, pathetic, mindless pandering to say that wearing a tax the rich dress is brave. So anyway, that's the show for tonight. It was funny because I'm playing golf today and I was trying to decide, like, do I have enough for a show? I couldn't remember all the topics that I had written down during the week. And because I might have started the show a tickle earlier than I did, but I'm playing golf. And I was thinking that I wasn't going to do a show because I thought that I didn't have any topics lined up for tonight. And then I got home, checked there's a little Word document that I keep on my computer that I make my notes on. And then I thought, yeah, you know, I think I do have enough material here to put a show on for tonight. So thank you guys for tuning in, and anybody on the podcast who's catching this, thank you for tuning in. Thanks for Ralph and Lon for popping in live here and catching what we got. We will maybe be back next Sunday. Kind of depends on if anything in the news strikes me as show-worthy. There's always stuff in the news. There's always stuff to comment on. But if my take on stuff isn't different than what I'm seeing in the news anyway, then, you know, I don't feel like throwing it out there. I don't need to be just restating or sharing the same sentiments that are already being said. That's why, like, I didn't talk a lot about, like, the outrage over the people getting killed in Afghanistan, because it's just, you know, my take is the same that you're seeing on Fox News, the same you're hearing on WISN Radio, the same as you're hearing, you know, on Clay Travis and Buck Sexton. So if I don't have a different angle, then I don't put it on. It's got to be something newsworthy and where I have a different angle than what you're seeing on conservative media. So anyway, you guys have a great week. Carry on. Be well armed.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.